The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
We got a busy afternoon ahead of us on this another beautiful day. Glad you're hanging out with us. Come to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome to The Big Show. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
I'm going to talk at 12:30 this afternoon with a guy who wrote a lengthy Facebook post about an experience that he had at what would be considered a high-end hotel chain location in Bellevue. And after giving this a lot of thought, we're not going to name the hotel because, first of all, they've been really cooperative with the police and with the victim. Secondly, they've been very cooperative with us as we have made inquiries, Nicole and I. We've made inquiries, and they have been responsive to that. And I've come away recognizing that this hotel knows that they have a problem. They're working with Bellevue Police. They're working for a security upgrade. So I'm not going to name the hotel. But here's what you need to be aware of. That even if you're staying in a nice place, you still can be a crime victim right now. And the hotel industry is suffering. Rooms have been largely vacant for the last year plus. And they're just trying to stay alive. They're just trying to keep the doors open and not lay off all the staff. So some places where rooms are ordinarily $200 a night are selling rooms for $30 just to try to attract some business. Now, there is a problem with that. The high price point kept a lot of criminals or homeless or whoever's causing these problems out of these hotels. But now more and more, we got some statistics from the Bellevue Police, and they're rather shocking. Crime calls from this one particular hotel have increased 400% in the last year. 400%. So this is what we're seeing on our streets. This is what we're seeing everywhere around here. So here's what this guy reported happened, and I'll let him tell most of the story. But he's a business traveler, comes up to the Seattle, Bellevue area many times a year from his home base. He checks into this hotel, gets to stay on a floor that supposedly has extra security and key card only access. Falls asleep, and all of a sudden, hears somebody at his door. And he thought they'd double booked the room, maybe, and that another guest was trying to get in. But now, he then realized the door crashes open. Thankfully, you know that little latch that they can flip up high on the door, that we can flip, as an extra layer of security? That caught and stopped. But they had broken through the primary door lock. And he said there were at least two people on the other side of the door, and they're engaged in a furious struggle. They're trying to break through that upper lock, and he's trying to push back and shut the door closed. And he's screaming at the top of his lungs, just trying to get anybody's attention. And after a struggle, maybe 20 to 30 seconds, they stopped pushing, and he was able to get the phone, call 911. Bellevue Police responded very quickly, and they were able to, you know, escort him to a safer place down in the lobby. But I want you to know about this, because even if you think you're safe these days, you're not. And I don't want to hurt a business that's already hurting mightily from the economic shutdown. But I want you to be aware of this broader problem, because this is happening at a lot. I was shocked as we started getting the data. This is happening at an awful lot of hotels all around the Puget Sound area. So if you ever have friends, family coming from out of town who are going to stay at a hotel, be vigilant and ask a lot of questions. You know, are you housing homeless people? Do you, with your cheap rates, have you had a crime uptick? All of that. And be vigilant, because what seemed to be a no-brainer just a couple of years ago might get a brain smashed in now today. All right, next up. And you'll hear that guy's story right after the 12:30 news. And it's amazing what he had to battle with this. Okay, next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
Yeah, this story comes from our friend and colleague, Jason Rantz, over on KTTH, who got the audio of a guy up in Arlington who kind of used, they believe he was trying to raise the pitch of his voice so he would sound like a woman, because he called in to 911 about a guy, a young black man with a gun at a bus stop.
Well, I'm at the bus stop, and there's a colored young man, and I can see a pistol right there in his waistband. It seems to be firing every time a car drives by.
Okay. A colored young man who fondles the pistol every time a car drives by. Well, of course, police were upset about this. They raced to the scene, and when they got there, they discovered a young black man, Taimon Leverett. He says he was stopped and frisked by police for no reason other than being black. But here's the kicker. It turns out that Taimon Leverett, who was trying to say, oh, no, the police just did this, you know, arrest me for being black, turns out he's the one that placed that 911 call that you just heard. And it's not the first time that has happened. But in all these cases, he calls the police, says he sees a young black man with a gun, and then he's trying to get the police to come out and apparently rough him up. And it's not working. This is in December. Same guy.
Okay, I'm with my daughters right now. There's a young African-American male teenage. He has them black and red. I see him. He has a gun on him. And you know, I have my children here, and okay, I'm concerned for our safety.
Okay, so he wants, and it turns out that he says he wanted to goad the police into a George Floyd type situation. Wanted to goad the police into a George Floyd situation. Now, that's a pretty sick human being right there. To waste police resources, to continually call the police using a phony ID, but calling to report on himself. And then if there's anything untoward in the police encounters, then this guy would scream, holy heck, about how he was roughed up and stopped just for being black because he didn't have a gun on him. Can you imagine the jobs these cops have to do? They respond to a 911 call like that. Of course they're going to respond with guns drawn if the information that they've gotten is that this is a young black man with a gun. So it is absolutely insane, the kind of stuff that cops have to deal with. Let's see. He's currently under Department of Corrections supervision. He has an affiliation with the Bloods gang. Told the Department of Corrections officer that he's a victim of racial profiling. And according to the DOC officer, he said that he was stopped and frisked by Everett police for no reason the previous day because of being black. But this has just been a long scam that this guy has been pulling. Probably was angling to get a lawsuit out of it. Here's the police chief in Arlington talking to Jason.
To have this type of situation come up at a time where we're working so hard to build a stronger relationship with our communities, this really works against us in making that happen.
That's Chief Jonathan Ventura in Arlington. But, yeah, just another layer of absolute nonsense that our police have to deal with as some people try to goad them into getting attacked so that they can file a lawsuit. Crazy. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
There's a horrible story out of the International District where a teacher was attacked. She was walking with her boyfriend, and there's so many mentally ill street people down there. This woman, they walked on the sidewalk past a man. They haven't caught a guy yet. I think I just heard in the top of the hour news that they just arrested the guy in this attack. That's brand new breaking news coming in. But he had put a rock in a tube sock to use it as a makeshift nunchuck. And they smashed this teacher in the face with it. And her colleagues say that she's having trouble to speak. The victim in the story is Noriko Nesu. She teaches Japanese at Inglemore High School. And I was listening to the Cairo 7 story, and apparently they are looking at this as a hate crime.
Nesu is a longtime Japanese instructor here at Inglemore High School. According to Seattle police, she and her boyfriend were strolling through the International District last Thursday when a random man approached them. Nesu told police that the man carried a rock inside of a sock and used it as a nunchuck. In a Facebook post, she said she suffered extensive fractures to her face and teeth. Tonight's Seattle police still haven't been able to identify the suspect who attacked Nesu. While the exact motivation for this random beating is still unclear, Nesu's co-workers are convinced this attack happened because Nesu is Asian.
And we don't necessarily speak up as early or as loudly as we should. In this case, it's gotten very close to home. It's one of our staff.
If this case is determined to be a hate crime, Nesu would be the latest victim in an attack against Asians. That's because anti-Asian hate crimes in Seattle spiked dramatically in 2020, going up 100%.
Okay. So they are saying this is a hate crime. I have absolutely no idea. It's a horrible crime. It's a horrific crime. And anybody who smashes in the face of another human being should go to prison for 10 years. They won't. This suspect that they've caught, if he's convicted, they'll get him in. They'll get him right back out on the streets, even if he is smashing in the face of people. I'm surprised that everybody's running with hate crime. We've got mentally ill criminals and drug addicts that have flooded the streets of Seattle throughout our entire Puget Sound region. And they commit random violent crimes on strangers all the time. You may recall a few weeks ago, there was a woman who was just planting flowers in a little tree cut out in the concrete sidewalk down on downtown under the monorail. And this lovely woman, she was on her kneeling pad, just wanting to beautify her neighborhood. And all of a sudden, a guy out of nowhere walks up and kicks her in the face, busted her up. I talked to that woman right after. Her name's Tracy. She told me about her injuries from getting randomly attacked. Yeah. Understand you have 10 fractures in your face and head. Is that right?
Yeah. I found out yesterday at a follow-up appointment with my nurse practitioner that I've got additional fractures in my cheekbone as well. So
Oh, my gosh.
I've got an orbital blowout. So I've got 4 fractures around the left eye. And then in the sinus, centrally, and then shattered on both sides of my nose. And
so, I mean, another horrific random attack, just like the one the woman down in the International District suffered. In the attack in Belltown, Tracy, who you just heard, she has an English accent. She is Caucasian. Her attacker was black. That black guy had just a day earlier kicked another white woman in the face the same way. Just walked up. This is on a bus. It was all caught on video. Got on the bus, walked up to her, and just cheap shot, blindsided, kicked her in the face, injuring her. Why is that not a hate crime? When a black guy randomly attacks white women? And, or, conversely, why is it always a hate crime if a mentally ill, drug-addicted street person attacks a person of color, whether they be Asian or black or brown? If you're telling me that the guy with the rock in the tube sock, nunchuck, deserves more time in prison than the guy who is kicking women in the face, I just don't buy that. They both caused horrible injuries. And they both should go away for 10 years. But we treat criminals differently based on the color of the skin of the person they attack? That's never made sense to me. And plus, how can you get into the head of somebody who's so mentally ill that they're swinging a rock in a tube sock at random people and thinking that they're thinking straight enough to even be able to cogitate on the skin color of their victims? The discrepancy is ridiculous. If you're going to charge the one last week as a hate crime in the International District, go after the black guy kicking white women in the face with a hate crime as well. Got to even things out here. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Going to check the news for you, and then we'll talk to the business traveler who came to the Bellevue, Seattle area and had a difficult fight at his hotel room door. Details next. Well, here's a story that I think everybody needs to be aware of, whether you think you need just a little getaway at a local hotel or if you have family, friends coming in from out of town. A guy named Jeff, he posted on Facebook something that happened to him in Bellevue. And Jeff joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Jeff, good to talk to you. I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out, Dory. Appreciate it.
Okay, you are a very frequent traveler. I can tell that from your post. How often are you on the road?
Yeah, I'm on the road probably 100 nights a year. I travel for my job. I travel weekly, commonly up to the Seattle area. So I run businesses in north and south of the city.
Okay.
So I'm on the road quite often.
Okay. And so you were staying in Bellevue about a week ago. Tell me what happened.
Yeah. So I checked in. I've stayed at this hotel many times. It's very convenient for me. They generally upgrade me to the executive floor, the ninth floor. And I like that. Has a added level of security. You have to have a key card to get to the floor. So it was pretty usual for that to happen. Mm-hmm. At about 9:45, I was in bed and kind of had the TV on and been dozing off, and the phone rang and it kind of startled me. I thought first it was my cell phone, looked at it, wasn't, and get out of bed to get to the phone. By the time I got there, they had hung up. Went back to my bed, and I realized, I thought, well, maybe the TV was up too loud or something. I remembered when I checked in, they said that there were only a few other people on that floor because they were doing construction on the floor above. So got back to the bed. I mean, this is within seconds, and I hear somebody at the door, rustling at the door.
Okay.
And my first thought was, well, maybe they double booked me. So I went back to the phone and I could see the door as I was heading back to the phone, and I looked over and the door slammed open and I could see a very large flathead industrial screwdriver come through between the threshold and the door. And I had the little L doorstop on, thank goodness.
Yeah.
And So at that time, I ran over to the door. My room's dark for the most part, other than the TV, and started yelling as loud as I could, "Get out, get out." By the time I got to the door, they had slammed into it. They didn't seem to be too deterred that I was in there.
So let me ask you, before you continue, do you have any idea how they got the door open? Presumably they did not have a key card. So how'd they get it open?
I'm assuming the screwdriver. I did not have the deadbolt on, which I usually do. I don't know why I didn't, but in my recollection of kind of going back through my thoughts, I didn't have that on, I don't believe. And I think they were able to just get the screwdriver through the latch. And I think that's what got the door open. The screwdriver kind of came through when they were able to pry it open. I mean, you could tell they were prying on the outside based on the looks of the threshold. So that's an assumption by me, but I'm pretty certain that's what happened. That's how they got in. So anyway, I start slamming on the door, and I'm just trying to make as much noise as I can, yelling at them to get out. They slammed against the door again. And, you know, I don't know how long this went on. I would say maybe 20, 30 seconds. I turned my back to the door because I'm thinking in my mind, if they get through, I'm done. I'm assaulted or worse. And so I'm pushing back, and that stop is clearly helping. I mean, that really was a good deterrent. And then, you know, after 23 seconds, the door just slammed up against the screwdriver is actually still in the threshold. And they stopped, pushing. And, you know, my assumption was that was it. However, I then realized, I know there's not many people on this floor. Obviously nobody heard what I was, you know, when I was yelling. I don't know what triggered them to stop, but I was afraid to open the door and see any, you know, to look out because I mean, maybe they're out there. It's extremely terrifying, Dory, extremely terrifying. So I ran over to the phone, and called the front desk and yelled at them to call 911. Somebody's breaking into my room. Ran back to the door. They told me they'd send the maintenance manager up, which I thought was odd. They did. The maintenance manager came up and retrieved the screwdriver. I yelled at them, "I'm not coming out until the police are here." They patched through to my room, the 911 dispatch person who talked to me. I think it probably took maybe 10 minutes for the police to get there. So okay. She kept me on the phone, and then the police arrived.
Do you think this was a homeless person? Because at one point in your Facebook post, you said that the hotel informed you they cannot evict long-term guests that cause problems due to the governor's eviction moratorium. And you acknowledge, you said, "I don't know about the truth of this or the policy," but you say that's what the hotel has told you. So have you found out anything more about this since you posted that?
Well, a little bit more, Dory, but I'm still searching for some answers here. Actually, I think a bigger program at the Red Lion. The police informed me that it had gone downhill since COVID and that they had a permanent shelter program going on there and that it was a dangerous area. And so that kind of got my attention. Because the next day when I talked to the manager, he confirmed that they had, some people living there and that they actually indeed think that it may have been one of the residents, permanent residents that did this as they'd had some problems.
So. I do want to get this in here. Of course, anytime we hear a story like yours, we need independent confirmation here's what Bellevue Police told us. They located the call from you. They gave us an incident number. We responded and escorted him to the lobby as he requested. He did not want to pursue any other action, they tell us. Why would you not want to pursue any action on this?
That's not accurate. I was not asked, and I would absolutely pursue charges if they find the individual that was behind this. I would absolutely pursue that. You know, my thought afterwards, of course, I was shaking for several hours after this, and my thought afterwards was, I need to get to a secure place. And they helped me to get downstairs and out of that environment. They passed it to the hotel clerk there and then left, asked if I was okay, and then they left. So I would be interested if they found the person.
Okay.
And to my knowledge, they haven't. The hotel has reached out to me. The owner of the hotel has reached out to me. I had a long conversation with him last night. And he did acknowledge that they had a few people there in this program that they weren't able to evict. So to answer your question from before, that absolutely was not acknowledged by the owner of the hotel.
Okay. Well, and here's the other thing the Bellevue police told us. We have had many calls to that location over the past several months. They're compiling statistics for how many calls they've gotten and are going to share that with us. And then they said the city of Bellevue does not have any agreement to house the homeless. And so that's where I say maybe this is coming from King County. Maybe this is coming from an activist group. But I mean, here's the problem as I see it, Jeff, that I understand that people are looking for solutions to the homeless problem that our politicians have greatly created. But if the solution is putting good, hardworking business people like yourself in that kind of a dangerous situation, then is the cure worse than the disease?
And in this case, yeah, it's pretty bad, Dorian. I think that's why I'm not a big Facebook or social media person. I like my privacy. But that's exactly why I chose to post something, because at the time, and I will, they have reached out to me and are working with me on some safety issues that they've had and would like to improve. But, you know, I did research on this, and I didn't see anywhere in my research where the public was in consideration for their safety, right? In these programs. And that was concerning to me. I did reach out to the city of Bellevue. I sent just a general email to the city council. And I will say three of them, including the mayor, has reached out to me and just acknowledged that they got my information and they'd taken into consideration. I don't know what these programs are. I'm not an expert in that area. I stay in Bellevue because I won't stay in Seattle anymore. My concern is that if a hotel wants to do this, that's fine. That's fine. That's their prerogative, but there should be transparency. I should know that as a business traveler, that I'm choosing a hotel. It's safe and secure. And there's not this risk. And that was my point of posting, is that there's a risk out there. Don't list the hotels. In many cases, in some cases, I did find that they had some names. Quite frankly, I don't know. I've canceled my future travel here for a while until I can sort this out, because I have no idea. I don't want to live in fear, but the reality is based on what I've read, there's many hotels across cities in the Pacific Northwest doing this. So,
absolutely. I mean, that is no question. Like I said, King County is doing it, and activist groups are doing it in a renegade way. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we can get the word out, not just about what's happening around here, but if anybody who's listening travels to another city, that's a question worth asking. And like you said, I don't know if they'll get an honest answer, but I think that some people should at least ask before they go and check into any hotel, apparently.
I know I sure will.
Yeah, and I know you said that you like this chain and you think very highly of them. And one reason is their price point, you would think, would make it a safer place. So I get all of that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jeff, it's really good talking with you. I appreciate you coming on with me and helping get the word out.
Thank you very much, Roy. I appreciate the time.
You bet. All right, that's Jeff, a frequent business traveler up here, and I'm getting some text messages. Why aren't you telling the name of the hotel? Because they're victims, too. They're victims of this crime spree. And I've been all about helping businesses that have been brutalized and terrorized by this economic shutdown. And they're working with the police, and I don't care to victimize them even further, but I do want people to be aware that you got to have a heightened level of security right now, especially throughout the Puget Sound area, because crime is running rampant given our current politics. Okay, quick timeout, and then coming up next, Man, between Chris Cuomo and that other Chris who hosts The Bachelor, horrible apologies. People don't know how to apologize anymore. All right, details coming up on the Dory Monson Show. Nobody knows how to apologize anymore. We saw that yesterday when Andrew Cuomo gave a pathetic apology for allegedly sexually being suggestive to at least three women who have come forward. But this is about as bad as an apology gets.
It doesn't matter my intent. What it matters is if anybody was offended by it. And I could intend no offense, but if they were offended by it, then it was wrong.
Oh, it's on the victims. They're too sensitive to having you cup their hand or their face in your hands. They're too sensitive asking, may I kiss you? They're too sensitive. If anyone was offended, then I apologize. Meaning, I didn't really do anything wrong. You're just taking it the wrong way.
And if they were offended by it, I apologize. And if they were hurt by it, I apologize. And if they felt pain from it, I apologize. I apologize.
But only if they were hurt or felt pain. If you were tougher than that, if you know how to take a little bit of Andrew's joking around, then I don't apologize.
Did not intend it. I didn't mean it that way. But if that's how they felt, that's all that matters. And I apologize.
If. That's a bad apology. Hey, now apologize to all the children and grandchildren of the thousands of elderly people you sent to their death in the nursing homes. The real scandal surrounding Andrew Cuomo. And then you have Chris Harrison, the host of The Bachelor. And he went on Good Morning America, and he didn't help himself at all.
Why would you defend Rachel Kirkconnell?
It was a mistake. I made a mistake. I am an imperfect man. I made a mistake. And I own that.
A couple weeks ago, he said we should extend grace to the contestant who went to a sorority plantation-style party in 2018.
You said, quote, is it not a good look in 2018 or is it not a good look in 2021? Because there's a big difference. So what is the, to you, what is the difference? Or is there one?
There is not. Antebellum parties are not okay. Past, present, future. Knowing what that represents is unacceptable.
Okay, good. Check the news for you, and then best 15 next.